Well, welcome. Wow, what a great crowd. We're going to do a little introduction, but I'm Alan Steinfeld from New Realities. I'm so happy to be here at the Assemblage, which is an evolution in working together in community. I was just telling Deepak that. And what do you think of this place, Deepak?
It's gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Well, the people who are behind the scenes here making sure everything runs smooth is Ashley and Magdalena. And Ashley's going to just do an introduction.
This is our first house, and we have all 12 floors. On our 12th floor, we have our amazing alchemical apothecary with plant-based intention elixirs. The cafe is also open if you're hungry. We've just paused lattes until the end of the talk, so it's not so loud. And now I'm going to let the beautiful Magdalena take it away.
Is Beth, are we getting this on my Facebook Live?
Yes, we're getting this. We want to make sure everyone sees this around the world.
We are live. I'm Magdalena. I'm one of the founders of the space. I'm the chief creative officer of the Assemblage. So I want to say a few words to welcome you into this space. We're here at the Assemblage, we're a co-working space with a social component. We're opening our second location in a few weeks, which is also going to have living spaces, which is going to be a new experimentation for us. So the vision behind this space was to create a place that feels more home than home itself. We're quite fascinated by the fact that we're the only conscious species in the planet, or at least that we know of. And the fact that we can define our own evolution and create our own reality. So we started by deconstructing the way we work and the way we interact with each other in this space. So we created a place where you can have daily meditation, eat Ayurvedic food, stay connected throughout the day with intentional settings and intentional rituals that we have in place. Also really kind of interact with each other from a meaningful place and see each other and listen to each other. And then after work, you have access to programming that can also help you in your own path and evolution. The idea was also to assemble people that are at the forefront of the evolution of humanity, not only in mindfulness and consciousness sectors, but also in technology and capital, so that we can start cross-pollinating those things and assembling everyone under one roof that shares this beautiful mission of us. So it's really an honor to have you, Deepak, in the space, because you're really helping us with our mission of assembling our community here and share the wisdom that you have with us. Thank you.
Wow, it's like this is the future. It's here. So my name's Alan Steinfeld. I do a show called New Realities. It's on YouTube and also on Manhattan Cable. And it's dedicated to the evolution of consciousness. And over the last 20 years, every time Deepak has a new book out, he calls me up and says, let's do a show. Because he said to me, there's stuff he can say on my show that he can't say on ABC. So feel free to say stuff you wouldn't say anywhere else. This book is why we're here. It's his new book called The Healing Self, and its subtitle is A Revolutionary New Plan to Supercharge Your Immunity and Stay Well for Life. So this is I just read this, and it's a great integration of the mind, body, spirit that flows together. It's not like there's mind, body, and spirit. It's one, it's connected. So that's part of what we'll be talking about. We're also going to be talking about what Magdalena was saying, the evolution of consciousness. But you've written other books. This is like your 85th book. He writes 3 books a year. It takes me 10 years to write one book. But you wrote the book called The Quantum Self. You wrote the book called The Ageless Body, Timeless Mind. But how is this book the next evolution from those earlier works? Or you want me to ask an easier question?
That's good. So everyone here is having an experience they call their body, right? You can look at your body. Where is that experience happening? Where is the experience of your body happening right now?
You mean like in our minds?
In consciousness. Where is, who said that? Okay, so your experience of that which you call your body is happening in that which human beings call consciousness or awareness. Your body is an experience that you're having. You can't say, this is my body right now, because over a lifetime you've had many bodies, even this lifetime. You had the body of an embryo, then you had the body of a baby, then you had a body of a toddler, a teenager, and that which you have now. This is an experience you're having in consciousness. Moreover, what we call our body is not a thing, even though it appears like a thing. It's an experience and it's an activity. If it was a thing, it would be like a frozen anatomical structure. It could be a statue. But it's not a statue, it's a process. Right? Now, scientifically, we can say that the process is the recycling of atoms or molecules, air, water, earth, etc. But I'll tell you why that's not a correct interpretation, but we can say that's the scientific interpretation. So every time you breathe, eat, digest, metabolize, experience the world through your five senses, all of that is causing the recycling of your body. 98% of all the atoms that you have in your body weren't there 1 year ago. So this right now is my year 2018 model. Okay. Last time I traveled to New York, I brought the same suitcase, but not the same body. Moreover, what is recycling is all the planet is recycling. Actually, the carbon, the hydrogen, the oxygen, the nitrogen in your body, which is 96% of all the elements in your body, and the rest are things like calcium, phosphorus, etc. They were originally forged in the crucible of burning stars, supernova. So when a giant star exhausts its thermonuclear energy, and then hydrogen and helium start to fuse, that creates carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, not hydrogen. Hydrogen was made at the Big Bang 13.8 billion years ago. But everything else in your body comes from a star. And as of now, scientists believe that there are 2 trillion stars. Sorry, 2 trillion galaxies. 2 trillion galaxies. We live in the Milky Way galaxy, which has 100 billion stars. Next door is something called Andromeda, and then there's Virgo. But keep counting till you get to 2 trillion. That's the number of galaxies. Our galaxy has 100 billion stars. There are now, according to current cosmology, 700 sextillion stars. I don't even know how to write that.
More stars and than sand, grains of sand on all the beaches in the world.
Ten times more visible stars. 10 times more visible stars than all the grains of sand in all the beaches and all the deserts of the world. So, where did your body come from? Where's the carbon in your fingernails coming from? Where's the oxygen going to the brain coming from? Probably different galaxies. In fact, it's almost certain that 50% of the atoms in your body are not from the Milky Way galaxy. So, you are a stardust being that's recycling as this body right now.
So how do we make this practical? That's great, but how do we affect, I mean, it's great, I love being part of the stars, but how do we bring it back to health and healing and consciousness in here?
Well, the first step is to find out who you are, because, you know, everybody says, I'm a body. You're not a body. You're the one who's having the experience of body in consciousness. Second thing is, you're not your mind either, because what we call mind is just recycling of everybody else's thoughts. And now, of course, it's even more complex because people are watching us on the internet and our thoughts are recycling with theirs. And then they have their opinions and what we call mind is just basically a conditioning of the collective human mind. And that conditioning is very deep. It goes to cultural conditioning, religious conditioning, some cases scientific conditioning, but science is a methodology, right? It's another story. So who you are is consciousness having an experience that we call body, mind, and universe. But these are human constructs. It's not the reality. So if I ask you, what's this? What's this?
The table.
A candle. What's this? This. Microphone, right? This. Okay. But actually, these are human constructs. If you were a baby and nobody had told you this is a nose, this is a hand, and you're Indian or you're male or you're female, transgender, whatever, all you would be experiencing without conditioning would be shapes, colors, sounds, tastes, smells, perceptual experiences. And those perceptual experiences are actually activities in your own consciousness. Okay, because just like a thought is an activity in your consciousness. So think right now of a beautiful sunset on the ocean. Just have that thought. You see an image? There's no image in your brain. It's in your consciousness. Okay, if you look at this, all that's coming to your eyes are photons. There's no color, there's no shape, there's no dimension. All that's happening in your eyes is electrochemistry. All that's going to your brain is an electrical current. All that's happening in your brain is chemistry. But you're experiencing this room. You're experiencing this body. You're having thoughts. You're looking at the world and you're calling it the universe. So the basic point to understand is that which we call mind, body, universe are human constructs. All there is sounds and colors and shapes and smells and tastes. And then interpretation, which we call thought. Then we like it, dislike it, that's the beginning of emotion. So once you understand that the whole experience that we call the human experience is a human story. Okay, no animal would call this a microphone. If you have a dog or a cat, it doesn't know what your job is or how much money you make, or all human constructs. Go beyond the constructs, this is consciousness. Your body is made out of consciousness because the body is a modified form of consciousness. Once we get there, then we can change the experience of the body.
Well, that's the question, because if this is the body and something's feeling a little off from, a cold to illness, then it's the thought, then you're saying, I think you say that in this book, how do we then get back to health, wholeness, healing, those words that all mean that same connection.
Okay, so again, let's go over the words, two words here. Self, what's the book called? The Healing Self. Okay, the word healing is the same as the word holy, which is the same as the word health. And so healing, health, holy, wholeness is the same word. Healing is knowing who you are, which is the self. So the healing self is very purposely chosen. Self is that which knows this is an experience and this is an experience. But it all goes together. This experience can't go without that experience or that experience or that experience. It all goes together. That which we call mind, body, universe, the world, relationships, is unified experience in consciousness. And fundamentally, that experience is very simple. It's either sensations. This is a sensation, right? This is a sensation. My buttocks touching this is a sensation. So it's either sensations, images. I told you, imagine a sensor. There's an image. Imagine your house, imagine your mother, that's an image. Imagination means image. So sensations, images, feelings, emotions, love, compassion, joy, equanimity, but opposite, anxiety, fear, stress, anger, hostility, grievances, resentment, guilt, shame. These are all emotions, whether we are connected or not. So sensations, images, feelings, thoughts, and then sense perception, sound, touch, sight, taste, and smell. This is all of it. Okay, if you had to summarize this, if you want an acronym, SIFT, S-I-F-T. Sensations, images, feelings, thoughts. That's all you experience. The rest is a story. It's a human story, which is a fantastic story, because as human beings, giving stories and constructs to experiences, we have the ability to create buildings and stars and microscopes and microphones and all of that. The stars, universe, atoms, molecules, this is our story. There's no such thing. In the deeper reality, all there is consciousness modifying itself as sensations, images, feelings, thoughts. Now, how does this relate to the healing self?
Yes.
If you are healed and you're holy and you're whole, then there's no fear of death. There's no construct such as birth or death. There is no construct called body-mind. It's just consciousness. That's all there is. And consciousness is not in time. What's the most common word we use for consciousness?
God, you mean?
No. What? What's the most common word in any language?
Awareness.
I. You say, I went to the movies. I was a baby. I like Chinese food. I don't like Mr. Trump. Whatever. But, you know, most of our experiences are identified with I. Right? The experience is constantly changing. So I was once a baby, or I was an embryo, or I was a stardust. I was in a different galaxy. I never changes. I is the same being that is having the experience. So once we get grounded in I, then the healing self means that everything is an experience, and the more that experience is in the direction of joy, more than anything else, or playfulness, more than, you know, you see a baby, no construct, right? No religion, no nationality, nothing. Baby is happy, joyful, creative, playful, till it's bamboozled by, you know, you're American, you're Indian, you're Catholic, you're Jewish, etc. After that, we are part of the conditioned mind. So in order to return to that, you have to get in touch with sensations, images, feelings, thoughts. On the highest level, then the sensation of the body, highest level, is no sensation, total bliss. You don't even know you have a body. It's lightness of being. Okay, so there's no boundary, which is actually the truth. All boundaries, let me finish this thought. So all boundaries are conceptual, perceptual. In the fundamental reality, there's no boundary. So your body and one and the universe are one unbounded experience of joy, ecstasy. People take drugs to have this experience. And the reason drugs work is they break down the boundaries. You know, whether you're taking ecstasy or whatever, or LSD or
ayahuasca.
Whatever.
Huh?
Well, ayahuasca.
That's the drug of choice.
What they do, or yeah, all this, but what they do is they break conceptual boundaries. Okay, but once you break conceptual boundaries, then the experience of the body should be lightness of being, or joyful, energetic body, or love and compassion in the heart, feeling of being connected, or a reflective but very quiet, settled mind, which you don't see. People are anxious, they're stressed, they're dogmatic, they're not reflective, they're very sure of themselves. You can't be sure of anything because we don't even know how we experience reality. We don't know how photons coming into the brain are creating this. We don't know that. We don't know what a thought is.
You think, though, consciousness itself is evolving, and part of being here is to push the envelope of awareness and make known the unknown, create more novelty, more awakening of the divine in form. So I'm saying there's an evolution to consciousness.
There's evolution to the play of consciousness. So, you know, this is a very complex thing to try to understand.
We're sure.
But, you know, Rumi, in one of his poems, he says, I was first a mineral. As a mineral, I was asleep. Then I was a plant, and I was dreaming as a plant. Then as an animal, I started to wake up. And as a human being, I said, what's going on? Who am I? And I started to wake up from the waking dream, which is what the dream is right now. It's a waking dream. It's a vivid, lucid dream. And waking up to our own being, the play of which is constantly in evolution. And in another poem, Rumi says, when I die, I will soar with angels. But when I die to the angels, what I shall become, you cannot imagine. So consciousness plays through imagination. It creates images, then it embeds itself in those images, and then it becomes the story that we call this. But it's our story, it's our collective story, which is right now in jeopardy, right? Because we have atom bombs, we have racism, we have
Trump,
we have extreme nationalism, we have extinction of species. This is a very dangerous story right now. We need to change to a different story, but we can't do that till we wake up.
Well, we're waking up here.
Yes.
And I think.
And on Facebook right now.
Of course, we're waking up Facebook Live.
So many places.
And that's why we have, so that becomes the eternal
self. By the way, Facebook. I'm speaking at Facebook next week about how do we rewire the global planetary brain. So we don't rewire it through manipulation, because that then turns out to be what Russian hacking did, right? Or all these people did. We can only rewire the global brain if we want to heal the global brain by changing ourselves. So the more authentically we shift in consciousness, the more the planetary brain, because it is a brain, the internet is the human condition. It'll evolve through us.
You know, I think the important point you make here, one of the points is that when you become the witness, when you become the awareness of the eye, things also happen in the body, a kind of coming together, witnessing that transcends the stress of being the separate self. I think that's...
Yeah, so witness, it's a very good word, witness. Witness, by definition, the spectator of experience, is non-judgmental. Okay, because once it's judgmental, then there's noise, right? And that's the mind. So you are the witness of the mind. You're not a thought, you're the one who's aware of the thought, right? And the thought comes and goes, like we did just now. You're the witness of emotions. You're the witness of this experience called the body. You're the witness of all this. When you're a witness, silent witness, what Krishnamurti said, the highest intelligence, the ability to observe yourself without judging yourself, that's, in our biology, that's the highest intelligence, which is similar, by the way, to deep sleep. In deep sleep, you're not aware, but you can wake up in deep sleep. That's the whole idea, that you wake up to awareness in deep sleep, then you will know what death is. Because death is just a fear of the unknown, but if that unknown becomes known to you, then that's another construct, death. So being a witness is the highest, where homeostasis takes place. Your mind is silent, your body's already healing itself, by itself, self-regulating. The second highest intelligence would be what we call the feeling that we get when we are in love. Whether it's your spouse, your child, or just an idea, you can be in love with the universe or with a song and you still get that feeling. Okay, so the third is this reflective self-inquiry. So, there's a sequence, being, feeling, thinking, speaking, doing. Okay, so again, in the traditional wisdom traditions, that's what yoga is. You know, Raj Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Gyan Yoga, Karma Yoga. Yoga means union with the self. And it includes all the yoga we do physically also, because the physical asanas are called seats of awareness. That's what they mean. So when you're doing cat-cow or whatever, how many people do yoga? Every posture is a seat of awareness. When you wake up to that, it's just delightful. That's healing.
You know, people might not know, but he's a doctor, Dr. Deepak Chopra. You're an endocrinologist, and you studied internal medicine, but that created a nice platform for being a spokesperson, in a sense, for the body-mind-spirit movement, the human potential movement. And the idea of supercharging your immunity, I think there's something happening on a cellular level when you come into that witness observing consciousness. Can you talk about that, what happens cellularly to us when we come into that wholeness, how that changes?
It's pretty complicated when you look at the science of it, but let's talk about it for briefly. And you know, this book is actually a sequence after super brain, super genes, this. But when you were conceived, when you know your mom and dad got together, you were one single cell, fertilized ovum, you received 25,000 genes from your parents, half from your father, half from your mother. What's a gene? A gene is a stretch of DNA that codes for a protein. DNA stands for deoxyribonucleic acid, and there are four letters that make it up. There are chemicals, adenine, guanine, cytosine, thymine.
Amino acids.
They are the basis of the amino acids. And there are only four letters, A, T, C, G. So those four letters are made of atoms which come from stars. That's the original sequence, right? And then those genes create what we call a human body. But then, towards the end of the period of embryogenesis, the mother's amniotic fluid starts to have bacteria start to leak into it. And when the baby is born, then the vaginal secretions of the mother, they cover the baby's body, but the baby also inhales them and swallows them. So your lungs and your stomach and your gut and your skin acquire 2 million to 20 million extra genes, which are not human. They're bacterial genes. These are called the microbiome. You have 99% more bacterial genetic information than you got from your mom and dad. They gave you 25,000 genes. The bacteria gave you, of the earth, the planet, they gave you between 20 million genes. So you have more genetic information in your body that comes from bacteria. So what are these bacteria? They're found in the soil. They're found in this food. They're found in plants. They're found in bacteria. They're the ecosystem of our planet.
We're a walking bacteria colony.
We are a walking bacteria colony with a few human cells. Now, the bacterial mass is only about 3 pounds, same as your brain. But the genetic information is 99%. You cannot change the genes your parents gave you. That's like you were dealt these cards.
Not with epigenetics.
Well, you can change with epigenetics the activity of those genes. So think of these genes like all the lights in this room, and there's a computer somewhere, and I can turn off that light, I can turn that light on, I can dim that light, I can switch on that light, I can increase the brightness of that light. This is called epigenetics. So anytime an experience is wholesome, wholesome means emotionally love, compassion, joy, equanimity, playfulness. Wholesome also means quiet mind, meditative mind, pure awareness. Then the good genes go up, the bad genes go down in their activity. But the genes themselves don't change. You're dealt this deck of cards, and by living consciously, you can improve your chances of how you play these cards.
The gene expression changes.
The gene expression changes. So that's what epigenetics is. Now, we also know that only 5% of disease-related gene mutations are fully penetrant. What does that mean? So think of DNA as the alphabet, genes as the words, and the body as a story. The body is the story of the total universe, by the way. Total universe, this is right here in the body. That's why in the Shiva Sutras, there's Lord Shiva teaching Shakti. He says, meditate on your body as the universe and having the nature of awareness. Right there in one line, everything is said. meditate on your body as the universe and having the nature of awareness. Not even a metaphor, this is a fact. Okay?
How is it a fact, you're saying? Because that's all there is.
This is the whole activity of the universe. Dark energy, dark matter, stars, gravitation, electromagnetic fields, force fields, atoms, molecules.
Right here.
Right here. Yeah. This is a microcosm of the whole universe as
not
an activity.
Just my body.
Okay? Yeah. Everybody. Yeah. And everything else, by the way. A plant, a microbe. Of course, the human body is the latest evolutionary development. But there's no reason why this will stop. Okay, so that's epigenetics. You cannot change your genes. You can change the expression of your genes. But here's the really good thing about it. You can change your microbial genes. You can change the population of your microbial genes. And the first thing that'll do it, by the way, all the things I mentioned, sleep, stress management, emotions, exercise, yoga, pranayama, healthy food, being in touch with nature, all that will change your epigenetics. But the fastest way to change your microbial genes is change your diet. Within a week, you will change the microbial population of your genes if you change your diet. Basically, eat as much variety as you can of plant-based foods. So the more diverse your plant-based foods are, the healthier your microbiome will be, because those genes in the microbes that like healthy food, they'll multiply, and the genes that are inflamed will decrease. Because right now, with the food production we have, antibiotics, steroids, hormones, pesticides, organicides, animals that are pumped with steroids, chemicals, that's destroying the microbiome. In fact, people don't even talk about this, but the destruction of the microbiome could be the reason for our extinction. 30% of the microbiome has disappeared in places like New York or Los Angeles or any industrial world, part of the world.
The external microbiome that we have access
to. This is right. The microbiome everywhere in our food has disappeared. Okay, so if you want healthy food, get it from a farmer's market, get it from, even if you eat meat, etc., which I don't, but if you eat that, then make sure it's not meat that has been pumped with steroids and hormones, antibiotics, petroleum products, it's all of that, which is industrial food production, not to mention the cruelty that goes into it. So the more natural your food is, the faster your microbiome will change. Now, at the risk of sounding like I'm selling a commercial, but I'm not, we have just recently partnered with a company, which is startup, which can take a stool sample. You know, you take a little toilet paper after you've had your bowel movement, put it in a FedEx package, and they will analyze your microbiome through artificial intelligence. And you will know what foods will immediately shift your microbiome. There's no universal diet for anyone. So if you want to check that out, by the way, you're curious, viom.com/perfect health, if you want to check your own microbiome.
So is this your answer for supercharging your immunity by changing your by the good bacteria you carry around with you, increase that? That will supercharge?
You can change the entire ecology of your body, and your body is an ecosystem. It's not a thing. It's an ecosystem which is a total activity that is influenced by your lifestyle. Only 5% of disease-related gene mutations. I mentioned that. I got sidetracked. So gene mutation is like if your DNA is the letters, if your genes are the words, and your body is a story, then a mutation is a typo. You know, it's a mistake in the spelling mistake of. So, you know, maybe the letter T is upside down
deleted.
That's a mutation. The only 5% of those mutations predict disease. So everyone knows, for example, there's something called a BRCA gene that Angelina Jolie had, and she had to have a mastectomy because that's a fully penetrant gene for breast cancer. But here's the nice thing. Only 5% or less then those genes that cause specific mutations, that cause illness, that predict illness, are fully penetrant. It's actually less than 5%. That includes Alzheimer's, it includes all cancers, diabetes, inflammation, only 5%. Now that 5% in the next few years, we are already hearing CRISPR gene editing, so you'll be able to cut and paste your genes. Okay, I'll be take this mutation, delete it, and paste another one. Just literally cutting and pasting genes, that's going to happen in the next 5 years. But that's not going to affect the vast majority of illness, because that's only 5% of all illness. The rest is, how do we live our lives? How do we think? How do we feel? How do we behave towards each other? How do we treat the environment? I think if you have reverence for life, if you have humility, if you have love, and you choose everything consciously, all experiences, you affect 95% of everything in your body, including the mutations that cause, they don't actually cause disease, they make it more likely that you have disease. So, you know, there are certain mutations that somebody has, the family history of Alzheimer's, heart disease, cancer, but they're not penetrant. Only 5% or less are penetrant. So actually, as we move into the future, very soon, I mean, this is just a prelude, but all treatment in the future will be preventable, predictable, participatory, process-oriented, and reversible. Reversible. I'm not, you know, first time I'm feeling comfortable saying that disease can be reversed, whether it's cancer or, we already know that for heart disease, but we are beginning to recognize for other diseases. And one more thing, and that's in the book also, by the way, at every disease, there's a background, low-grade inflammation in the body. So, you know what inflammation is. When you fall down, you get a bruise, that's inflammation. That's acute inflammation, which is very necessary, because if you didn't get that inflammation, you'd bleed to death. Or when you get infection, pneumococcal infection, your body makes antibodies, but there's also lots of inflammation. So acute inflammation is actually helpful. It protects us. But most chronic illness, whether it's diabetes, heart disease, cancer, autoimmune illness, there's low-grade inflammation that has no symptoms, unless you're a sensitive person. So, you know, I remember when I was practicing internal medicine or endocrinology, people would come to me and say, I'm tired. I said, there's nothing wrong with you, okay? Because I didn't know what was wrong with them, because we couldn't diagnose that, but they were feeling tired. Or you're probably depressed, or you have some anxiety, you have stress, which was also true, because that causes inflammation. There's no way most people know that they have inflammation in the body. But today there are what are called inflammatory markers. We call them cytokines. You can measure them. No matter what disease you look at, there's a little bit of inflammation that's going on. And if it goes on for a long time, then the disease manifests in different risks, depending on genetics, epigenetics, and so on. So right now, we have a project at our foundation where we're looking at inflammation as the number one cause of all illness in the world. Number one. That inflammation starts in the mind. Inflammatory mind is hostility, anger, grievances, resentments, you know, the desire to get even, all the rage you see. Then inflammation in the brain, then inflammation in the body, then inflammation in our relationships, ultimately an inflamed environment. So if there's one thing we need to address, inflammation. How do you cut it down? How you live your life.
But, you know, I thank you for that. But we're talking to an enlightened crowd. I mean, these people are aware probably on your Facebook Live, but we need to start with the medical education, the doctors, you know, and what Andrew Weil called medical hexing. Your doctor says, you know, you have this long to live, and then you fulfill that, because we are conditioned by that. There's that joke where the guy goes to the doctor and the doctor says, well, you have only one day to live. And the guy says, well, I won't be able to pay you. And the doctor says, okay, I'll give you another day. But, you know, we are influenced by those docs. So we need to re-educate the doctor. The whole medical system has to change by what you're saying.
Well, the current medical model is mostly two or three things. Pharmaceuticals, radiation for cancer or chemotherapy, which is pharmaceuticals, and surgery. Are these helpful? They can be helpful, okay, in acute illness. If you have pneumonia, an antibiotic could save your life. But if you're going to keep taking antibiotics, you're destroying your microbiome, which will kill you anyway. So pharmaceuticals are very helpful in an acute situation. But for chronic illness, they don't do anything. And the pharmaceutical companies are realizing that, by the way. So they're already looking at what we are doing and other people are doing. I would say for most people in this room, if they have a situation, just first go on the internet and get your information. You can get more information just by Googling than by your doctor. He's not interested or she's not interested in you as much as you are interested in yourself. So educate yourself, talk to other people, create your own networks of consultation. A doctor should be last resort in an acute situation. They don't know that much. And they're programmed with an old model. You know?
Exactly. That's why you're not practicing your medical.
No, we have a group practice.
But I'm saying, if we can get to the medical establishment, this could be. But they're not ready. What's your opinion of changing medicine from that foundational point?
See, as I look back at my own life, I started as an internist, endocrinologist, neuroendocrinologist, then mind-body medicine, now integrated medicine, and the next thing is consciousness. So that's an evolution. And that evolution is happening, not only in my life. It's happening, you know, I am a professor at UCSD Medical School. We teach integrative medicine. Mount Sinai here in New York, they teach integrative medicine. There's a huge movement right now. But, you know, the old doctors trained in my generation, which I don't count myself as one of them, but I am. But the new generation of doctors and the next generation of doctors, this medicine that we have right now, it's medieval. It's old-fashioned. It's obsolete.
We'll take some questions now. Wait, this one here, Indrani has a question. Here, can we pass her the microphone, and then we'll take you, and then...
What's our perception of change?
What time is it right now?
What? 5:04?
Because then we'll also do a book signing meeting.
Okay, so I want to leave by 5:45 latest.
So we'll just take a few questions, then we'll do a book signing, which is really
worth... We can take a question. Book signing is...
Well, whatever. Okay, we have a question right there.
So my question is about the society as a whole and talks, you know, we talked
Hold
about...
Hold up.
You spoke about healing the body and healing the individual. But do you have any thoughts on healing society as a whole, some of the toxic situations? You know, we're talking a lot about what women are facing, and everyone has different challenges. What do you think?
It starts with activism, but activism soon turns to anger. Now, there you have so many angry peace activists. What does that mean, you know? How can you be angry and be working for peace? So activism is important, but ultimately there's no social transformation in the absence of personal transformation. So each one of us must take responsibility, but then we should hang out with people who are doing the same thing. Because you know, you create an ecosystem of personal transformation, becomes social transformation, ultimately becomes planetary transformation. But that takes patience.
Okay, question.
You always say that people do their best based on their level of awareness. And I constantly feel challenged by how can I contribute to that awakening or awareness of others. And I think that, to answer my own question, is like based on how you live your life, you can somehow help others to get to that level. But to your point before, like I feel that we here somehow understand where you're talking about being even at a higher level of awareness. But for those that are not even there,
don't have a clue.
Right.
What do you say?
What, how do
you anything about those who don't have a clue, you know, but gradually we all kind of gravitate in that direction because that's the nature of evolution. And each generation is a slight improvement on the previous generation. I think the best way to ultimately have social transformation is if you are a good parent. That's the only way, because, you know, children's psychological, emotional, and spiritual makeup is determined in the first 3-4 years of life. So the best thing you can do for a baby is to give it attention, listen, affection, appreciation, acceptance. Make the baby years the most safe, nourishing, loving experiences. That child will grow up to be a healthy, whole adult. And it'll take time, okay? Because for many people, they're frozen already, even though they might be president of the United States, you know? So it's a small, incremental process, collective transformation. But I would say there are three words in Sanskrit that are very important: seva, service, satsang, getting together like this, and simran, spiritual practice. Those three are very crucial. And then you forgive the people who do wrong, because not because they deserve forgiveness, but because you deserve peace.
And bring them here, hang out with people of like minds. I mean,
that's what satsang is.
There was that interesting example used in the book of people who lived as if they were 20 years back in the past, in the book. Do you want to just
Ellen
talk?
Langer.
Yeah.
Ellen Langer is now a professor at Harvard. I knew her when she was, like me, a student. And this is in the 80s. She did an experiment where she took people who were fairly well along in their age, and she took them to a monastery, and they said, let's pretend it is 30 years ago. So they were listening to Elvis Presley, rock and roll music. They were watching all these programs from that time, Life magazine, etc., movies from Alfred Hitchcock. Yeah. And they just behaved and lived as if they were. It was 30 years ago. And their biology shifted. The biological markers shifted. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these days, the people say there's something called chronological age, which is when you were born. Biological age, which is your blood pressure, your bone density, your sex hormone levels, number of wrinkles, immune function, all of that. So that's biological age. There's chronological and there's psychological age. If you are always curious, if you engage socially, if you are growing mentally and evolving spiritually, your body will reflect that.
Exactly. We have one more question.
I've studied Ayurveda, and I know that's also something that you studied and practiced. And one of the things that you talked about in the future of medicine is, and some of the dangers of modern medicine, quote unquote, is the standardization, right? Surgery, radiation, medicine. In my experience, personalized medicine through systems like Ayurveda are one of the ways to counteract that kind of blanket radiation surgery approach. What types of practitioners are we going to need for the future to deliver more of that individualized medicine? What systems do they come from? And what types of practitioners do we need in order to address that need for more personalized care?
Well, so you can look at the body on a very physical level, which is what modern science does. It's a material object, which we know it is not. It's a process in consciousness. Or you can look at it at the level of energy, which is all the energy medicine disciplines, including acupuncture, acupressure, Reiki, etc. Or you can look at the body at the level of information, which is going a little deeper than energy. That's Ayurveda, basically, through sensory modulation. By the way, we just published two very important studies. One was that a week of meditation at one of our retreats change the entire genome expression. So all the genes that cause regulation, self-regulation, healing went up, some 17 times over baseline. And all the genes that cause inflammation went down. And then we also measured the enzyme telomerase that regulates your biological age at the genetic level. Telomerase went up by 40%, just meditation. Okay. So then we followed another study after that, which used Ayurveda 1 week, changing diet, behavior, sleep patterns, etc., emotions, taking herbs. And we measured literally trillions of bits of data. You need supercomputers to do that. Entire body had changed in 1 week. Then we have now done another study right recently that began as a curiosity. You know, how many people occasionally have walked barefoot on the beach? Anyone? Okay, you feel good? Okay, you walk on the grass barefoot or the earth. The reason is when you walk barefoot on the earth or the grass or the sand is your body locks into the circadian rhythms of the earth. So when you have jet lag, your biological rhythm is disrupted till you recover. But circadian rhythm is tied to what is called seasonal rhythm, which is the earth going around the sun, which is connected to gravitational rhythms, the tidal rhythms, you know, the ocean rhythms, because we have an ocean inside our body, similar to the ocean outside. So lunar rhythms, gravitational rhythms, circadian rhythms, seasonal rhythms, they're all part of the same cosmic symphony. We are part of the universe. We are a universe.
You are the universe.
You are the universe.
Name
so when you
book.
Walk on the earth, you reset not only your circadian rhythms, but everything else. So when I heard about this, and you know, last year's Nobel Prize in Medicine went to people who have discovered biological clocks. Every cell in your body has a clock that tunes into the cosmos. But this is ancient knowledge too. So, you know, if I touch a tree and you touch me and she touches that person who's touching her and she's touching me, we are all resetting our circadian rhythm by getting in touch with the earth, which is basically coming through the tree. So now we found that when you walk on the earth, and not we, but I say we means a bunch of very intelligent people, they found that when you walk on the earth or when you touch a tree, good reason now for hugging a tree and letting somebody else hug you while you're hugging the tree, you actually heal yourself. Inflammation goes down, inflammatory markers go down, and negative ions come from the earth and neutralize the excess free radicals in your body. So then somebody, a clever engineer, he said, you know, why can't we ground ourselves when we are indoors? So you could be sitting on this cushion and this could be connected through an earthing wire to the, you know, every outlet has three openings, mm-hmm. Every outlet. Right. So one is for earthing to prevent fires. So when you plug in your computer, the three prongs, right? So one goes into the earthing wire. You could take anything and earth it and you'll get that benefit. So now if you go on the internet, you'll find all these earthing devices.
Just that one prong, just plug into that with a certain, and you're grounded.
And you're grounded. You can ground your cushion. I have a grounding bed. I have a grounding chair at home. In my office, I have a grounding cushion.
I used to keep dirt in, from Sedona. And then my cat peed in
it. Yeah, but that dirt, it's no good unless the dirt, and the cat peeing is no problem because you get them, you know, you and your cat and your dog, they all share the same microbiome, by the way.
Well, you're saying standing in the dirt was not...
in the room because it's not connected to the earth. Although some microbial effect is there.
Okay.
The more you're connected to the earth, that's why being in nature automatically heals you, biologically.
But if you want to leave us all with something that we can take home with us, besides the book.
You don't have to buy the book.
No.
But here's what you should do. There's lots of things you can do. Let's do something very basic. And you can do it every day before you start your day. Okay, so let's do it. It's a form of meditation, reflective meditation, not anything too profound, but enough. Okay, so close your eyes and observe your breath. And then bring your awareness into your heart and mentally ask the question, who am I? Don't look for an answer. Just ask the question. Ask it a few times. Just being open and receptive to any sensation, any image, any feeling, any thought. Who am I? And now mentally ask the question, what do I want? What do I want? Again, being open to any sensation, image, feeling, or thought. What do I want? And now ask the question, what is my purpose? And finally ask the question, what am I grateful for? And now just feel your body and you can open your eyes. So just asking these questions every morning, then your day will be governed by those, you know, you're seeding your consciousness with those questions. So hopefully you'll be more conscious of the choices you make, but slowly the answers will also change because life is changing all the time. So your understanding of who am I will change. Because ultimately you are the universe, right? Mm. What you want will change. What is your purpose will change. And by the way, we just also did a study on gratitude where people ask this question every night. What am I grateful for? What happened today that I could be grateful for? Inflammation goes down in the body. Just by asking this question, what am I grateful for? Mm.
Thank you, Deepak, for spending the whole day here.
Thank you.
Thank you, the assemblage and the crew here, Aaron, yeah. Simone, everyone,
yeah,
Ashley.
Great place. Beautiful
thank you,
place.
Beth Grossman, for making this all happen. Magdalena, thank you for letting
thank
us be
you.
Here.
Thank
so
you.
So we're going to have a little book signing over there, and maybe a few pictures. People want to take a picture or whatever, but we can go
yeah,
over
that. Yeah, but just remember, I have to leave at
well, we'll sign as many books as we can.
And then okay. It's, you know, otherwise you can just sign my name yourself.